prayer. Prayer is what we want to end up talking about here this morning. As you know, as you can see on your bulletin there, our mission is to passionately rescue lives and restore relationships. We want to rescue lives through saving faith in Jesus Christ. We want to restore relationships through biblical mentoring. We have core values that are really needed in order for us to accomplish our mission. The first core value is godly servant leadership. The second core value is going to be Bible-centered preaching and teaching. The next core value is going to be passionate evangelism. Then we have strong families. Last week we talked about discipleship and counseling. And today what I want to do is spend time talking about prayer. Prayer. We firmly hold and we believe that the individual and as a church should be people of prayer. Prayer is a form of worship. Prayer approaches God in praise, in adoration, confession, thanksgiving, supplication, and intercession. And we are going to continue to encourage you to pray, and we will look at ways in which we can equip you to pray. With that then, let's go to Colossians. Colossians chapter 4. I want to read just a couple verses, then we're going to be jumping around in our Bibles here a little bit. In Colossians chapter 4, Paul begins the book in chapter 1 with a snapshot of his prayer life. And it's a really neat snapshot that all of us should really embrace. We see that a little bit in chapter 1, chapter 3. He begins this chapter with prayer, and now he's going to end this book with an admonition to prayer. So let's read chapter 4, just verses 1 and 2. He says, "Masters, give to your bondservants what is just and fair, knowing you also have a master in heaven." Slavery was very much rampant, even in the Christian churches, and there were many Christians who were still slaves. And I say that because, go down to verse 2 then, he says, "Continue earnestly in prayer, being vigilant in it with thanksgiving." Even in the midst of this hardship, he wanted them to pray. Notice what Bill Hybels says here about prayer. And this is something that we all struggle with. He says here, "From birth, we have been learning the rules of self-reliance." And that is true. I've got a 15-month-old grandson and about a 2.5-year-old grandson. And Stephanie is hopefully trying to teach them so she doesn't have to continue to change their diaper and feed them. She's teaching them self-reliance. But it goes on to say, we strain and struggle to achieve self-sufficiency. Prayer flies in the face of those deep-seated values. It is an assault on our human anatomy to pray. We just don't like to pray. It is an indictment on independent living. When you think about it, it is true. If I'm going through my whole day without prayer, I'm basically saying, "God, I don't need you. I got this." Now, people really get sick, or when I lose my job or something, the biggies, you know, the 911s, then I'll come to you. To people in the fast lane, determined to make it on their own, and life is very busy, our crazies, our schedules, it is an embarrassing interruption. It is almost even more than an embarrassing interruption. It's an annoying interruption that we have to put the brakes on our day and pray, because prayer is alien to our proud nature. In Colossians here, Paul is telling us that we are to continue earnestly in prayer. Jesus, if you remember, here's just a brief rundown of prayer. Jesus, again in the Gospels, especially in John chapter 14, John chapter 15, taught the disciples not to underestimate the power of prayer and the intimacy that one can have with God only through prayer. James James chapter 5, he uses the example of it not raining for 3.5 years. In the Old Testament account of the prophet saying it's not going to rain and it didn't rain for 3.5 years. And then the prophet prayed and it rained. And then he says to us in the New Testament economy, the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. And he's talking about very clear, demonstrative, tangible changes that prayer can have. And that's what James is doing. Paul, writing to the Thessalonian church in 1 Thessalonians 5:17, says that they are to pray without ceasing. And I got a little metaphor I'll use to see if we can develop that a little bit. Prayer. Continue earnestly in prayer. Continue earnestly in prayer. Prayer is to be with a mindset of like this long-distance runner that will be up there on the screen here in just a second. It has the basic meaning to stay by, to persist at, to remain with. You just kind of keep at it. You just keep coming at it. Picture a long-distance runner. This long-distance runner, and you can see he's got a long ways to go. This would be like your multiple marathon. I mean, he's not going 13 and a half miles. I mean, he's going for his whole life. And this idea that we are to continue in earnest prayer, just think of this idea of a distance runner, just staying at it, just staying at it. Just keep going, just keep going, just keep going. For some of you that get on the treadmills, you know, after a couple of minutes, it's like, okay, I'm bored, now what? Well, you can't. You got to keep getting on it. Or worse, man, they've got this new machine, these stair treads. I don't know if you've ever seen them, but they're like 6 feet in the eye, and all you do is just walk stairs. I don't have to worry about 10 minutes on that, getting bored. 5 minutes, I'm done. But the point here is that we are to continually, earnestly, it's a singular Greek word, by the way, for those that are interested by that. There's just that continual steadfastness, persistence. You just got to keep at it. Let me give you an example of what this sounds like. In Luke chapter 1, I'm starting this year my Bible reading. I started with the Gospels, working through the Gospels, and I'll go back to Genesis later on. But I was reading through the Gospel of Luke. I saw a very beautiful story in there. I saw a beautiful story of an older man and an older woman, an older couple. And this couple were very godly. The Bible states in Luke 1 that they were righteous before God, blameless before God, and all the commandments and the statutes of the Lord. They were the perfect couple, well advanced in their years. But there was one problem with this beautiful story, and that was she was barren. No children. Well advanced in years. How many years you think she was praying to have a child? Decades. Decades. And decades. That's only 30. Well advanced in years. She has been praying for a child since, I don't know, maybe before she got married, but as soon as she got married, until well advanced in years, decades and decades. And I read that and I go, oh God, forgive me for getting kind of frustrated for weeks or months or even years. But it's more than that, because as you read a little bit further near the end of that chapter, after she's conceived, she says this. She says, the Lord has done this to take away my reproach among the people. Somehow she was getting some sort of, whether it was being isolated and there's some ostracism going on, whether there's finger pointing, whether it's Job's counselors in the Old Testament saying, oh, you must be full of sin, you must be doing something wrong or you'd have kids. However that looked like, she was getting some flack from the people for decades. And yet she never got mad at God. She never said, why me? Why this? Why now? She just continued earnestly, persistently, stayed at it. And she kept praying. And she kept praying. And she kept praying. Just like this long distance runner on the screen, he's got a long way to go. This is not for the faint hearted. You and I, we've got to really maybe amp up our prayer life a little bit here from Colossians chapter 4, verse 2, and pray, and pray, and pray. Now, again, I don't know the request that you've been praying, nor do I know how long you've been praying for this request. But keep at it. Keep at it. You may have a long road ahead of you to run. And it may not be that your prayer is not answered until you also are well advanced in years. But again, this is not for the faint of heart. We are to give ourselves continually and earnestly in prayer. Second, as we read a little bit further there in Colossians chapter 4, verse 2, we have continue earnestly in prayer, comma, being vigilant. Vigilant. This next slide here, I think, captures again what Paul is trying to communicate to us. Animals. And we've seen it now many times, especially with the geese, with some of the snow, there's not a lot of grass that they can see. But while there may be many geese that are got their heads down eating, there's always one who's that ever vigilant one. There's always one that is watching, because how many of you have been able to walk up on a flock of geese? I mean, none of us. We can't ever get close because there's always the one that's vigilant. There's always the one that's watching. And we are reminded here, even in this slave-master economy, that the Colossian Christians must be vigilant. And there's a couple of ideas here that I believe is communicated in the Scripture what this vigilant refers to. It's a mental alertness. So here's what I do sometimes. I'll confess my sins. Sometimes when it's hard for me to sleep, I will lay in bed at 1, 2 in the morning or whatever, and I will start praying with the idea that hopefully this will... Don't do that in your prayer life. We are to remain vigilant in our prayer life. You're not supposed to be laying in bed. You know, you got that nice fleece. We bought some fleece sheets. Wow, those are sweet. Got our cover on top, and you're just all snuggled in and warm, and you can't sleep, and you go, okay, God, now we'll start through the prayer request. We'll do the schmaltzes, and we'll work through that. No, that's not it. You don't have to necessarily be up and moving, but you got to be vigilant. You need to be mentally alert, and there's a couple things, I think, that we need to be alert of. And we need to be alert of the times. In 1 Chronicles 12:32, it says, the sons of Issachar had an understanding of the times. You and I, we need to be praying maybe just a little differently for our country now than maybe 2 or 3 decades ago. We need to be praying for our families a lot more now. I mean, pornography with our children was limited to getting a magazine somewhere or going to a movie theater. We need to be praying now for our children and our grandchildren who can access it any place, at any time, just about anywhere. We need to be understanding the times in our prayer life, and we need to be praying intelligently. Another idea of alertness is in Matthew 12:42. We need to pray because we don't know the hour our Lord is going to return, and we must be vigilant. Again, going through the Gospels, I read of the brides who were waiting for the groom to come, and some of them were kind of goofing around. They didn't have their oil lamps ready, and nighttime's come, and the groom is coming, and these gals, they don't have their lamps lit. And they're really, well, it really was negative consequences for them. And you and I, we need to be vigilant in our prayers, because we don't know when the Lord is coming. And then just one more idea here, and that is in 1 Peter 5, verse 8, we need to be vigilant because our adversary, the devil, walks about as a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. Vigilant of our times. We need to be vigilant because the Lord could return. We need to be vigilant and even to some degree understanding what's inside our heart. But we need to be vigilant because there is that deceitfulness yet of sin still within us. We need to be vigilant in prayer for the eternal destination of our loved ones. We need to be vigilant for our eternal standing before God. We need to be ever vigilant because of the ever-present danger of the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, and our adversary who is running around seeking whom he may devour. And then lastly, Paul tells them in Colossians chapter 4, verse 2, I want you to continue as a long-distance runner, to keep at it, to not be weary. I want you to do it not in some lethargical, sleep-filled fogginess. I want you to be vigilant in your prayers, and I want you to do it with thanksgiving. Again, Paul's circumstances could have been very discouraging because he was writing this probably, where was he? He was in prison. And in chapter 4, verse 1, he says, now, you slaves, I want you to obey your masters. And masters, you need to treat your slaves well too, by the way, because you also have a master in heaven. So here you have people in the first century who are involved in slavery, and he's saying, listen, I want you to do it with thanksgiving. And that's a whole nother story of a sermon of what are some things that we could be thankful for in the midst of difficulty. But let me just say it this way. An ungrateful heart or a heart void of thanksgiving makes for a more difficult life in all of our relationships. Let me say it this way. If we believe that we deserve more from other people, we are not going to be happy. But we're also not going to be happy because we're not getting what we think we deserve from them. We're also going to be miserable inside, too, because we don't get what we think we deserve. It'll be like the fellowship meal here in about an hour. Wait a minute, I didn't get that piece of dessert. So, second of all, we believe we deserve more from God. And this goes way back to the Garden of Eden. This goes back to the Garden of Eden, thinking that we deserve more or better from God. And that makes that relationship very problematic. You and I, we hold this core value of Oxford Valley Chapel near and dear to our hearts. These core values are what we kind of build our life around. And today we finish this series on our core values with prayer. Now, a couple questions. First question, what letter grade would you give your personal prayer life? If you were to grade it, Robin being at Pensbury, they're just starting now their second semester, their third 9-week grading period, half of the school year is over. Last week, when the grades went out, what kind of grade would you have gotten for your personal prayer life? What grade would you give that? Those of you that are in a home situation, or college students, they're not here, but even in a dorm situation, what letter grade would you give to kind of your family or your dorm prayer life? What grade would we give that? Here's an illustration I want you to take away with you. Would you be willing to today commit to God that starting today, you're going to view your prayer life as the clothing you wear throughout the day rather than the 2 or 3 meals you eat a day? Would you be willing today to commit to God that from now on, God, I'm not going to view my prayer life as my 2 or 3 meals I eat, morning, noon, or night. You know, we do it for 10 minutes, we're done. But would you be willing to commit to God that I'm going to view my prayer life as the clothing that I wear throughout the day? Would you be willing to do everything you can to improve your own personal or your family prayer life? We are to continue earnestly in prayer. To be vigilant in prayer. The goose. There's always got to be one who's watching it. There's so much going on around us. We need to be vigilant. Lastly, with thanksgiving. Do not go through your life thinking you demand or deserve more from others. Do not go through your life demanding or thinking you deserve more from God. That is a miserable existence. Prayer. Will you this week view prayer as your clothing rather than meals?